This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. On June 2, 1913, the University of North Carolina dedicated a memorial on its Chapel Hill campus to students who fought for the Confederacy. A century later, Silent Sam, as the statue has come to be known, still stirs passions. Many students who walk by it every day may dismiss it as a historical relic, a reminder of a time with little relevance to today. But in recent decades, others have been arguing for a deeper understanding, one that highlights the state's complicated past. The speech delivered at the monument's dedication 100 years ago this Sunday was a defense of white supremacy steeped in violence. Some historians and activists say if UNC and Chapel Hill are to reckon properly with their own history, it's important to acknowledge all of Silent Sam's meanings. Joining us now are Adam Dombey, a doctoral student at UNC who studies North Carolina's monuments. Tim McMillan is a professor of African and Afro-American studies at UNC. And CJ Suit is a community activist and a member of Real Silent Sam Coalition. Welcome to all of you. Good to have you here.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
Adam Dombey, tell us a bit about the creation of Silent Sam. Let's go back 100 years. Who was behind the creation of that monument? What was the motivation?
Normally, you'd have the United Daughters of the Confederacy be the primary fundraisers and designers of a monument. The monument on Chapel Hill's campus, though in name, was nominally done by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and though it was presented by the United Daughters of the Confederacy to the university at the dedication, in reality, most of the funds were raised by the president of the university, Francis Venable. In fact, the daughters were asked to raise only $1,500 of the $7,500 that were spent on it, and this is an expensive monument, more in line with the monuments that would be on Raleigh's Capitol Square than on a typical county seats monument. As you get all over the state, you have those Confederate monuments. So it's an expensive one as well. But it was really ushered through by Venable, who sent hundreds, if not thousands, of letters asking for small donations of $5 or $10 to alumni. And utilized class pride like they do today when they call you for money as a UNC alum. Your class hasn't given enough money. Give some more. And the last $500 was actually put forward by the university.
Class pride and race pride.
Yes.
Because this may be unique in that it was more than the Daughters of the Confederacy behind the funding, unique in that it is slightly more, well, substantially more expensive than many of the monuments that were being built. But in other ways, this is 1913, and that is not unique to be seeing this kind of monument go up in the South as the myth-making now about the nobility of the Southern cause is in full swing. Tell us about that and what's happening at this period
in
the history.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Monuments are as much a reflection of the period when they are built as they are of the events they nominally commemorate. And the monument really says as much about North Carolina in 1913 as it does about the state in 1860. And so what you have going on is you really have the cementing of Jim Crow in full swing. I mean, this African Americans have been disenfranchised, whites are firmly in power, and you're not going to see wide-scale African American participation in the larger political scene for years to come, until the Civil Rights Movement, really, because they so firmly reasserted white supremacist rule within the state.
And lest we think that this was only about a monument to those who fought bravely for the cause of the Confederacy in the Civil War, Julian Carr, who I'll ask you to tell us about him in a minute, made a speech that made it clear it was about more than just valor on the battlefield. Who's Julian Carr and what was in his speech?
All right, so Julian Carr was an industrialist, a Confederate veteran, and a philanthropist. He's also who Carrboro is named after. He served as a private during the latter part of the Civil War. He had recently been elected the head of the North Carolina Division of the United Confederate Veterans. So he's really a spokesperson for North Carolina Confederate Veterans at the time that he gives the speech at the dedication. And he would later be elected president of the national body as well. So he's not a fringe person we're not talking about here. He's extremely wealthy, one of the most wealthy in the state. And he was frequently asked to give speeches at dedications. And what makes this speech really unique is almost his honesty. And Carr did not just see this as a monument to the men who fought during the Civil War. He saw it as a celebration of Reconstruction violence as well as wartime service. So he thought it was to the efforts of Confederate veterans to reassert the white race. And he says they actually saved, and this is a quote, saved the very life of the Anglo-Saxon race in the South.
So it's about white supremacy.
Yes.
It's very clear. Tim McMillan, nothing on the monument says anything about that, does it?
It does not.
What understanding do you think the average student comes away with as they walk past this thing every day without any kind of critical evaluation or critical statement?
Well, there's a saying in memory studies that if you want to hide something, build a monument to it. And Silent Sam is a really good example of that. His most famous aspect is that his gun goes off if a virgin walks by. I think very few people, when they see him, up until recently, have looked at him as a monument to the Confederacy, to the Civil War, and definitely not to white supremacy.
Tell us about you. You have started something called the Black and Blue Tour. Tell us about that.
Well, the Black and Blue Tour is sort of a collaborative effort. It began in a class I teach called Defining Blackness. And in 2001, the students were talking about how black students and white students might view the campus differently. And so we decided to take a tour of the campus and look at things that people could interpret differently. And of course, Silent Sam was the very first item. Most of the students were from North Carolina and were very familiar with Confederate soldiers in their front yards, or at least at their court squares. And we were talking about how when you come on a college tour as a junior or a senior and you come with your parents, how black parents might say, well, are you sure you want to go to a school that welcomes you with a Confederate soldier? And of course, Silent Sam does point north, which I think gives us an indication of who's supposed to be on the campus.
You started this tour in 2001.
Right.
Was it were students surprised, particularly white students, surprised to see that African-American students might have a particular – that it would have a completely different view, not only of that statue, but a lot of the imagery on this campus that feel about this campus much differently than they did?
Yeah. I think it was always really revelatory to the white students who participated in the tour and in the class that there were more than one way to look at North Carolina, but specifically at the University of North Carolina. Because, you know, we're supposed to have our filial feelings and we're supposed to be patriotic to the old Tar Heels. And that is something that's promoted across all lines. But I think the racialized history, the history of slavery, which only really started to be exposed in the 21st century by the efforts of some graduate students, local activists, has really changed popular opinion, though I must say I think the majority of people on campus still are not very aware of most of its histories, other than the Davy Poplar.
So C.J. Sood, what are the goals then of the Real Silent Sam Coalition?
I think one of our major goals is historical accuracy on the campus and really to contextualize the things that we have sort of erected to represent us as a university and as a community. I think initially, in our initial letter, we had about four goals. Our initial goal was to get a plaque on Silent Sam, as well as to make the Black and Blue Tour a part of student orientation, also to have, as well, a review board, a monument review board that would review monuments on the campus every 5 to 10 years, as well as a monument of equal or greater size to Silent Sam dedicated to a person of color, a black person, preferably a woman of color on the campus erected. So those were our goals initially going into.
You sent those to the university. What kind of response did you get?
We got a lot of acknowledgement to our concerns and that they were real and that they were founded. We had several meetings afterwards expressing sort of solidarity with our concerns. Most recently, we were told that our plaque concern and our plaque sort of desire for a plaque on Silent Sam was not the right time for a plaque on Silent Sam, that in lieu of that or instead of that, that there should be a plaque placed on the Unsung Founders Monument that's about 100 yards away, 50 to 100 yards away from Silent Sam.
Well, therein lies another interesting story. I want to get to the Unsung Founders in a second. But, Tim, I wonder how you feel about that plaque. Does that do it? Does that contextualize it? Now, you can't just pass by and not think about it. There's the story, the real story.
Well, it's funny. While I was walking across campus today, I saw two groups peering very intently at the statue and walking around it and reading all of the signage that it has on it. And it made me think that some sort of pedagogical description near the statue would be very useful, because a lot of people do seem to be looking at it. A problem, though, is, of course, which of the true stories of Silent Sam the plaque is going to say, and where exactly that plaque is going to be to problematize the statue. I know there are different opinions. Should it be on the monument itself? Should it be near it? My desire would be to have multiple signs around the campus, making this one part of the learning experience on campus, because it's impossible to contextualize history with one small sign.
Well, this gets us back to sort of how we memorialize our history at all, Adam. And I want to talk to you again about this year 1913. It's a time when we see this a real upsurge in monument building. It's not in the immediate aftermath. It's not when the carpetbaggers go home, when the South could have started, Southerners could have built these monuments. It's in this period, 1913. Woodrow Wilson, a son of the South and an ardent white supremacist, becomes president of the United States. He makes Josephus Daniels his Secretary of the Navy, one of the architects of the only successful coup d'etat in American history, the Wilmington coup d'etat of 1898. And Charles Aycock was one of his co-conspirators. There's not a county in this state that doesn't have something named after Aycock. So how far do you go, Adam, in sort of recontextualizing and critically evaluating the monuments to memory in this state?
Well, I think you've touched on something that's really important when you look at Confederate monuments. Is there is an upswing in monumentation commemoration from about 1895 on, right as the Jim Crow South gets firmly entrenched, that you have these Jim Crow laws are getting passed across the South, and you can't ignore that. On the same side, though, these monuments do, on some level as well, commemorate something else. They do commemorate men who fought for what they believed in. At the same time, they also commemorate men who fought to maintain slavery. So for the ancestors of a Confederate veteran, it's a very different meaning. And I think that there's a balance to be made that can be made quite easily. Maybe not easily, but should be made with a sign that can tell both sides of this story in a way that allows people to understand that the past isn't so simple.
Well, CJ, is that it for you? Is it about putting sort of competing memories back to back, or is there a way of averaging this and coming up with the memory? Let me ask you this question another way. What brought you to this particular issue?
I was born and raised in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and being a part of that community and a person of color within that community, I think it was really important for me for us all to have a collective understanding of the history. So I do believe that there is a way that we can show it in a way that allows people to really contextualize not only the history, but what's happening now within the community. If we look at our community, we look at the community of Chapel Hill and Carrboro, the fact that there was just a restaurant opened named Venable shows us very clearly that people have no analysis, no historical analysis of the place where they're sort of living in. And that's not necessarily, doesn't necessarily fall on the fault of the people, but also the folks who are controlling that history or know that history and are in places of power to share it. So I believe there is a place for us to like have a broader narrative and yes, a sign and plaque and things that show that, that describe the climate. Now, allow us a real analysis of what's going on now in the community. So as a community member and somebody who is a native, I think it's super important. It has always been important to me from the beginning of this that we, as a city, as a municipal place, like really, really understand where we've been and where we are and how that connects to how we'll get where we're going. Yeah.
Well, do we arrive at this by consensus, Tim? We talked about the unsung founders monument. I know you have some thoughts about this. Describe it, because it's a monument that came about by committee. I know it's something you're not particularly happy with.
Yeah, it's a very interesting monument. And when I first started doing the Black and Blue tour, it didn't even exist. It hadn't even been planned yet. It was a gift of the class of 2002, and that was slightly problematic because, of course, they were the class that was the first one affected by September 11th, and there were some discussions about having some sort of a memorialization of that instead. But it was very clear that the university's interests were going to be served by putting up a monument to the enslaved people who built the campus. And that was the intent of this monument that was originally planned in 2002 and then installed in 2005 with decent fanfare. And it's a low table with little figurines that hold it up. And on the top is an inscription, and the inscription has neither the word slave nor the word black on it. I know CJ said something about people of color versus black. And the people who built the campus who were slaves were black. And it's kind of interesting that the monument rhetorically ignores that point. And I believe that was part of the committee issue because a lot of people have a lot of problems with the word slave. But if you're talking about slavery, it's kind of hard not to talk about slaves. The other problem with the statue is that the little figurines are made of bronze, bronze patinas. If you sit on the stools as you're supposed to, you put your feet on these little figurines, and you wear off their noses, their knees, and their breasts. And so there's a very clear misuse, I think many people would perceive it as, of the statue. So a place that's supposed to be making people ponder the issues of slavery and oppression is actually engendering some negative feelings.
Well, and part of that was to create a kind of a table, a surface around which people could gather and talk and perhaps talk about the issues raised by the monument itself. So to some degree, it's working. People are showing up and hanging out. But you're saying it ends up being a kind of inadvertent abuse.
Well, it was intended to be a place for difficult discussions, but it ended up being a place about which difficult discussions are had. I don't think – I've seen sword and sorcery groups jumping on and off it. I've seen people changing their children's diapers and stretching before they run, none of which I believe is the intent of the artist. And I would like to point out that the artist also didn't intend for it to be in the shadow of Silent Sam. The original place, or the place the artist would have preferred it be, was on the edge of the quad. So it would have appeared larger and it would have been more visible. But for pragmatic reasons of tree roots and things like that, it ended up where it is.
So, Adam Dombey, is this a question of if we want to have a kind of consensus about our history or a more open and inclusive discussion about what our history is, in the case of the unsung founders, are we talking about who was on that committee? Can we create a committee that can actually put together a collective memory that all of us are going to say, yeah, that's I'm somehow included. Part of my story is in that monument. Or are we just talking about a number of monuments that tell very different stories clustered together? Adam?
Well, that's a really, really hard question because I'm not sure that you can have a consensus history, that you can have one story that's going to make everyone satisfied. And it's not an issue of compromise either that, you know, well, I'll give you this and you give me that and we'll even it out. It's the tough stuff of history. And when I teach my students, I always try to get this through to them that history is rough. It's not simple. There's not a simple answer, and both sides can be right and wrong at the same time, in that the monument has too many meanings for it to ever be expressed on a single sign. Everyone who looks at it finds a different meaning within it, and it's gained meanings over time. I mean, it is now the place on campus to discuss race. And so I'm not sure that a committee could ever suitably find a sign that's going to make everyone happy. But perhaps you could at least create a debate which students should be involved in.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Adam Dombey, doctoral student in history at UNC, part of the team behind the website documenting North Carolina's monuments. Tim McMillan, professor of African and Afro-American Studies at UNC, who leads the Black and Blue campus tour. And CJ Suit is a member of the Real Silent Sam Coalition. They're going to gather at the monument 4 o'clock this Sunday to mark the 100th anniversary. Thank you all for being on the program.
Thank you.
Coming up next, financing local food with slow money, a growing movement in North Carolina and beyond. Stay tuned.